Welcome to People Helping People, the podcast for social entrepreneurs who want to build a social impact business. I'm your host, Adam Morris, and I'm honored to introduce Bob, founder of the Murava Foundation, an organization built to end poverty by providing education, job recreation, improving healthcare, and strengthening the community so that there are opportunities for individuals to thrive in rural regions of the Philippines. So let's just dive right in. Bob, welcome on the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Before we dive into the history of how you got started, can you just give us a brief overview of what the Murava Foundation does?
Well, we kicked off with sponsoring kids out of slums in Manila. I was still living in Hong Kong when I started that. And then when I moved down here, the parents of the kids were living in a terrible situation, and they came from this particular rural area that I'm in now. And so they invited me out here, it was a couple of years later, and I saw the opportunity for increasing yields in farms and hopefully creating work. Plus, there was a whole lot else going on, and the school only had about a half of a roof after a typhoon 2 years previously. People were hungry everywhere. There was no healthcare. We needed irrigation. So it's been quite a journey covering many aspects, all aspects of community. So that's a quick overview.
How did you get started sponsoring somebody?
Well, that was interesting. I was in Hong Kong. It was 2008, which you may remember was a bit of a downturn in the world economy. We had factories in China. We closed them down. And I've got a business in Australia, which I still have. But my son runs that business. And so I was basically had an office in Hong Kong, and I knew I was going to run out of work. And I said to a friend, I'd like to get into start my own charity. I've been living in China for about 18 months, and I did start a charity there, a branch of a worldwide charity, and enjoyed it, working with university students and what have you. Kept me sane while I was up there. And so I was keen to do that. And he said, well, come and meet our Yaya. She's from the Philippines, and listen to her story. So I did, and she had these nieces and nephews living in poverty, and they weren't getting much schooling. So I sponsored them. It wasn't a lot of money, really. I sponsored them from Hong Kong without meeting them, and it was like 18 months later I came down, and I moved then to the Philippines. So that was 2008. So that was about 2010 I moved down here, And that's when I got to come out to the rural areas, and we really got kicked on from there.
What does the situation look like in rural areas of the Philippines?
Well, it's pretty desperate, really. I mean, you got 19.2 million Filipinos who don't eat well every day. They're hungry all the time. A lot of them are in this area here. Whereas 100 years ago, they were big landholders. Then they had 10 kids, 10 kids, 10 kids, 10 kids. Now you've got a lot of families that got a quarter hectare, half hectare of rice or veggie or coconut trees. And so they live in abject poverty. So there's a lot of potential here to help a lot of people. We can only go as far as we can go. But sustainability was the key to what we're doing. And right from the get-go, when I started sponsoring those kids, I promised that I'd take them through college, through university. And because I knew if you just get through high school, that's not going to get you out of poverty. The other thing, which is very important, I sponsored all the kids in one family, and that's what I still do. If one child in a family of, say, five siblings gets the university or college education, that family's never coming out of poverty, because that one child will be supporting that family. So it's all the kids in the family need to be sponsored. And then we've got families now come out of the slums. They've got nice homes. They're living a normal life. The transition for people out of poverty is quite interesting. It's a bit like, someone in the States wins. You have a lotto over there?
Yeah.
they change character. And that's a bit of a challenge too. We've got to counsel people through that. They get greedy and selfish. They're previously beautiful people. And so there's a lot of challenges that mixed in with the whole thing we do. But that program we continue with. We just received promise for donations for the next school year of another 5,000 a month. dollars, that is, and that'll sponsor another 25 kids right through college. And that's the easy part. The kids you can work with, and you can get them out of poverty and get it going. But, you know, all around us there's all these other people living on dirt floors, no toilets, no running water. Oh, wow. So there's still a lot of work to do for the parents, I guess.
What sort of things make a difference for the parents?
On the one side, when the kids get qualified, of course, the parents have an income. But for the parents, it's been a really hard road. Because we work with the rice growers, we're doing loans and all this sort of thing to give them inputs, fertilizers and that, so they get higher yields. And that was working very well. And then the federal government and their wisdom dropped all the tariffs on rice, and the prices dropped, and they couldn't repay their loans, and they still just grow rice for themselves. So that we haven't been able to help the rice growers. The coconut growers, there was nothing much we could do there. There's a very low price for coconut until we heard, it was about 7 years ago, we heard about cacao, and that cacao can be co-planted with coconut trees. And you can plant five cacao trees for one coconut tree. So this got us pretty excited. And I didn't know, there was these trees around with these odd-looking fruits hanging off them. I didn't know they were cacao. I don't know why I didn't ask somebody, but it was chocolate that was hanging on the trees. So we had an industry here back in the 1700s, 1800s, early 1900s, a big chocolate, big cacao industry, but it was destroyed by disease. And that was introduced by the Spanish way back. And those trees came from South America and Mexico. So these were the descendants of those trees growing wild everywhere. And I'm cutting a few things out here, but just quickly, we now propagate from those trees. And we started planting the seedlings 6 years ago. And, of course, with the promise that we'd buy all the fruit, not having any idea how to make chocolate or what we're going to do with the fruit. So that was a pretty exciting ride when all of a sudden the trees were starting to fruit. And, oh, hell, what do we do?
How long did it take for the trees to start giving fruit?
4 years. And we've just had a very good harvest now. We're just coming to the end of that harvest. So we very quickly, and there's a big cacao chocolate industry down south in the Philippines, in Davao. So we got down there. Government departments came in and helped us. We started learning as quickly as possible all about how to make chocolate. Selling the beans, the wet beans or dried fermented beans, there was just no profit for the farmers in there. And we had to take it right through to the finished product. So we got going with that. It was 2019. We were rocking along, and we got invited to go to Davao for the annual Filipino conference, if you like. And we were invited to put our chocolate into the two competitions, 100% chocolate and 70%. Well, we came first in one and second in the other. And at that point in time, and the whole crowd there, 600 people are looking at us like, who the hell are you? Where'd you come from? So what we've discovered, we've got a beautiful flavour in our cacao naturally there. Obviously, we worked it well. It's just our chocolate is I had to have a couple here to show you.
Mayon
Gold, we called it. And
I love that.
Yeah, and we have four styles of chocolate right now. We live underneath a live volcano, Mount Mayon, and just the soil, the conditions here, it's like grapes. If you take a Burgundy and grow it there and you grow another Burgundy over there, they're different flavours, right? So right here we've got this unique flavour. It's a beautiful chocolate.
That's cool.
So that was, thank you, yeah.
What goes into that process of making chocolate?
There's a lot in it, and so we needed investment for that. But we've had some very our own business in Australia is the major supporter, but we've got other businesses in Australia have been fantastic, and their regular cash flow every month is so important to charities. And most charities struggle. After 3 years, they give up because how do you get the donations coming in? Well, you know, the only way, thank God, we've got our own company underpinning everything. And other donations, and the Department of Agriculture helped build a building. The process is you've got the pods, I'll send you a video sometime if you like and show you what we do.
Yeah, I'm very curious.
The cacao pods, then we got to crack them open. You get the beans out, as they call them, the seeds. They ferment for 6 days. Then they dry for 6 days. Then you got your dried fermented beans, which most, like the craft chocolatiers in the States, they import dried fermented beans from the growers in South America and Mexico. But we take that then and we de-hull it, you call it, and you end up with cacao nibs. You would have seen them in packets, cacao nibs in, for sale.
Yeah.
And then those nibs go into melandras, which we imported from the States, I might add. And then we temper it. So you get that lovely, shiny, good, crisp chocolate and mold it.
Wow.
And bang, you end up with
chocolate.
So
that's cool.
So we're taking it. So basically it's the farm to bar story. And the profit from the chocolate goes three ways. A third back to the farmer. We're paying double the market rate already to the farmer.
Nice.
A third back into the factory and a third for the community projects, including obviously the sponsorship of kids. So that's been an absolute godsend, this cacao thing, because that's a sustainable solution to poverty. The income of the farmers increased more than four times. That's taking many of them above the poverty line. They've got extra money. We've lived day to day before that. You imagine? Like, these people have no hope. Like, they just don't believe anything you tell them for a start. They had to get their confidence. But now they're really coming around, but it's taken a long time. We've got our team going out around the farm all the time, talking to the farmers, helping, pruning. In their defense, coconut growers get a coconut, put it in the ground, and it grows a coconut tree. You just walk away and let it go. And, you know, 10, 12 years later, you got coconuts. Cacao trees never come out of preschool. They're in nappies all their life. For the farm, first of all, we give them the seedlings. All the seedlings died. The caribou came in and ate the bloody things. And, oh, my God. So we were learning at the same. So we had to educate them. But they're getting the money now. So now the word's spreading and it's starting to – we're really getting some momentum happening now.
That's fascinating.
So we've slipped through to the – so right now our concentration is the chocolate industry because it creates work. A lot of our staff are single mums. There are a lot of single mums here everywhere and grandparents looking after their grandkids. So it's creating work for those people. And everyone who works for me, none of them ever had a full-time job, I think, ever. I mean, for the older ones, this is just like manana from heaven. This is unbelievable. And we do benefits, you know, health benefits. And, and I've just given them all 2 weeks holiday each. They just don't know what to do. They think, this is what's this holiday business? So actually all the money that comes into us is helping everybody. It's 100% help because the people working for us were people living in poverty. They were living in dirt floors and what have you. But we've given them education or they've had education they've never had a chance to use. So it's not many charities can say 100% of the money goes into the communities. Less 1.5%. We're accredited by Rotary International and all the money is channeled through them so that there's tax deductions for people who make donations. Rotary's been very supportive, actually. Yeah.
Well, one thing that you've said, which I think is really fascinating, is how you take the money. And it's not just like, oh, we're giving money to the farmers. You have a very holistic approach of like, here's the different things that we need in the community in order to build up. Like you've done on the schools and the education and the infrastructure. And I'd love to just hear you go more into how we're using that money in order to increase the value of the community.
Yep. I'm talking about projects we're doing now. Then I'll talk about the previous ones. We're building what we call typhoon-proof homes. Now, these typhoon-proof homes are like palaces to these people. They are 2.5 metres by 3 metres concrete rooms. That's all they are, with a roof. But they've been getting their homes blown away for 50 years and they just rebuild and it's bamboo and tin and what have you. So we've built nearly 70 of those now, and that's an ongoing project because it gives them somewhere in a typhoon they can get in there. It's like a bunker. They've still got their goods. It's not all blown away. And we leave steel coming out of the side of two of the walls so they can tie on rooms. They've done a good job with it too. We've had a typhoon since we started and the rooms haven't blown away. So So that's an ongoing project. But before we first got here, I mean, the primary school, I went down there, I just couldn't believe it. There was no books, hardly any chairs and desks. The kids were on the floor. Half the roof was gone. If it rained, they all had to get over in the corner. A lot of the kids were going to sleep in the morning. And I said to the teachers, how come you're letting the kids sleep? They said, well, they haven't had any food for a couple of days. It might have been a day. Said, oh, shit. So we rebuilt the school, added rooms, put on a kitchen and a feeding area, and we fed the kids every day for about 5 years. And then in that last administration here, they actually started rebuilding schools themselves and they took over that role, which was great.
That's cool.
But that was how we started there. And then there was the health centre, which wasn't a health centre. It was just a room and one chair and one table. So we built a health centre where we could deliver babies, because the road into town was very, very rough. There was a lot of babies getting born in tricycles on the way in. So we built that health centre, and so a lot of babies have been getting born there and what have you. And then we looked at the vegetable growers up in Mount Mayon on the volcano. They needed water, and we built a big tank up there, holds about 240 ton of water, and it's gravity fed. When it rains, it just runs down a creek. We catch it in a small dam and then pipes down into the tank. And that's 10 years ago we built that. And that still operates. It works well. So they were the big projects. Well, there were other schools we rebuilt as well, of course. And so your question was, how do we impact the parents and all that? It's a bit hit and miss with them, except for the work we create building all these things. And if they're people who are not farmers. So, but we do provide work regularly for building, and like building those little homes or expanding the factory or whatever. And really the kids who are now educated, they're sending money back to those parents, so that impacts them. And the farmers, the coconut growers, of course, they're over the moon. But other than that, because of the small land holdings, there's very little you can do. I mean, vegetable growing, here's the water, so they're growing more vegetables. So they've got better incomes than what they had before. They can grow more veggies because there's water there up on the mountains, very fertile country. But these things have a ripple effect, and the whole community looks and is a lot better off than what it was before. But I don't know how you describe it. You need to go back in time 10 years ago and look at it then and look at it now, and you go, holy hell, what happened?
That's fascinating. And also, when we started, you said that the parents just take a lot more educating on how to move out of poverty.
Yes. Very difficult for them. I mean, you live day to day all your life, not knowing where your next meal's coming from. And then suddenly you've got some money left over. You don't know what a bank is. You've never been in a bank. I mean, the transition is very difficult for them. I was warned about that by a congressman when I first started. I thought, oh, bullshit, what are you talking about? Of course, I'll be fine. No, he was right. There's a lot of that dealing with the psychology of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're going to make a change. Like our promise is, take people out of poverty permanently. If you're going to do that, you've got to be here for a generation or more. And our job's far from done here. There's a lot more to do. The produce we got this season from the cacao was only from 2,500 trees. I bought land years ago for nothing because it was supposed to be worthless. It was. And which was like 2.5 hectares. And we can actually process the produce from 50,000 trees there. We just need the money. We just need the money to get more trees out and have more people out there helping the farmers. So, I mean, any donations received are not wasted, I assure you. There's a lot to do here. And just imagine, if we had 50,000 trees out there around all these farmers, can you imagine the difference in the incomes and just the economy of the whole area?
Tenfold.
And it's possible. It can be done. We've got another 12,000 which will be coming on fruiting over the next 2 years. So we're on the way. But I'd like to speed it up a bit.
So 15 years. Have you seen students go through college and graduate?
Oh, yeah, many. Architects, accountants, teachers, engineers. Yeah, these are kids, like when you first met them, they're just running around in bare feet in slums, and the next thing they're an architect. And you go, wow, how did that happen? It's fantastic, really. I mean, of course, a lot of them end up working overseas because we don't have a lot of industry in the Philippines. There's some crazy foreign investment laws, which we won't go into. But 10% of the GNP, gross national product, is from the Filipinos, 10 million of them working overseas. If we could just get foreign investment here, this country could just take off. But right now, it's the worst country in Asia for the difference between the rich and the poor. And as I said before, there's 19.2 million just way below the poverty line or hungry. There's 50 million who don't have savings.
I'm always amazed how many people I talk to, and it's normal for, you know, a parent to be working over in Hong Kong or somewhere else.
Yeah.
And just have very limited contact to be able to come back. And
it's with their smartphones now, of course, at least they've got that. And that's been a big boon for them.
So how has this journey changed you?
Well, it's been a great lesson, especially in patience and forgiveness. And life is a lesson, isn't it? Isn't that why we're here?
Yeah.
I'm learning heaps of lessons, so I'm really enjoying it, really. Getting unconditional and non-judgmental is a great lesson to learn. And when you're working in this work, you've really got to be like that. Mm. You've really got to change yourself and put everything else away. And it is what it is, and love them for who they are and not what they do.
Now, were you new to farming when you started this?
I couldn't keep a pot plant alive. It was so bloody ridiculous. I've come here and I'm telling rice growers how to grow their rice. They've been doing it the same way for 100 years. I said, no, you don't do it like that. This is what we're going to do. I used to laugh at myself. Oh, this is crazy. But I was never a farmer. I mean, I loved cattle when I was young and ride horses and chase cows, but growing crops wasn't my thing. But I've got to tell you, this cacao industry is a lot of fun. And it was the US guys, it was 2005, that started the craft chocolate industry, which is a new way of chocolate. And that's taking the flavours of different regions and not over-treating them, you know, like the dandelion in San Francisco do two ingredients. I'd never heard of this industry. But I decided with the team, I said, we're just going to do two ingredients. We're going to do pure cacao and sugar. And we'll use organic coconut sugar. And bugger me, it was 12 months later, I was on the internet. And I went, what's this? And it was called the craft chocolate industry, which was started back in 2005. And it's now quite a very big part of the chocolate industry. So we're in it by accident. We're here.
I love it. Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, by the way, our chocolate has gone to Amazon thanks to the Department of Trade and Industry. We'll be available on Amazon in the States in the next couple of months.
Oh, May on Gold. How do people find you?
They just look for May on Gold. Can you see the logo there? May on Gold.
Yeah, I love that. May on Gold.
So that's Mount Mayon's a volcano. And yeah, I don't know where I got the gold from, but anyway, May on Gold it is. So you'd Google that and you'd see it there on their website. It's not there yet. It's going through all the red tape in the States. It's in the States. That would be a great support. If we can get sales in the States, that would be fantastic for us.
And if people wanted to support the charity, how else could they do that?
Well, if you go to www.muravahfoundation.com and that's Muravah Foundation. Can you understand my A's? Not that it sound like E's, they reckon. Aussie accent. I made a speech in the States when I was in business, and I was laughing at what I was saying. It was later that one of the American US guys said, "Mate, no one could understand you." I was just talking too fast. I was down south, and you can go there and you donate through International Rotary, and so that would work in the States as well. You'd get a tax deduction, and that's pretty important for businesses. And if people want to send, to build one of those Typhoon bunker homes, it's $1,000.
That's it.
That's it. And for the next 50 bloody years, that family is set for $1,000. How good's that? You know?
That's a good return on investment.
It really is. It really is. So that's why that program, we've only just kicked off with it. The massive typhoon year. When was that? It must be 2 years ago now. So we kicked that program off then. But people can say, here's $1,000, build a home. We'll build the home. We'll send you photos of the family and the home when it's built and all that sort of thing. Obviously, people like to see what they're doing. And that's an easy reward way to show the reward, to invest in the cacao industry, buy our chocolate or send us money and say, I'd like this to produce 5,000 seedlings. Okay, let's do that. Talk to us through the website and we can chat about what people can do. Regular donations, even if it's $100 or something like a month, are really good. If someone says to us, here's $100 a month for the next 5 years, we put that in our cash flow and our planning. Like any business, you've really got to project out. I've just written a paper for the government boys that they want to do a what they call the roadmap for the cacao industry. And they had one which went for 3 years. So I've written one for 20 years, totally different to theirs. So we present that next week and hopefully they take it on board. You've really got to look out and dream and make it happen.
So, imagine too, as you see the village building up and you see, hey, here's what this is going to need in the future in order to keep people here.
Yeah.
And not just educate people so they can go overseas, but yeah, make it so that they're self-sufficient.
Really nice to have them back, yeah. Our operations manager is one of our students who qualified through college, must be 5-6 years ago now. And she's come on very, very well. The younger ones that we've gotten through college, I want more of them to come into the business as we grow it because they've really got a totally different attitude, you know. Nothing like some education. Not that I had much of it but back in the day, but it really does make a difference for these kids.
Well, too, and if they understand that transition as well from their own experience of growing up in poverty and then understanding, hey, here's what's possible and here's what's the flip side.
Yeah, and they have the heart, they have the compassion for the people around them. And I don't think any of them are really saving too much money. They're too busy. I mean, there's not a lot of healthcare here. And, you know, if someone's sick, what do you do? So that, we're doing that all the time as well. There's always money going out or a bag of rice or something. So we do a lot of little things as well as stuff I'm talking about. It's a whole community commitment.
That's fantastic. Well, I love this journey that we've covered, just starting off from sponsoring a child, and turning into a family, and turning into a village.
I was thinking I was going into semi-retirement, but that didn't last long. But look, business, I've always loved business. I've been in business all my life, and I only had two hobbies, business and drinking. And as I got older, I had to give the drinking away. So, so business was it.
You've got a crutch to fall back on.
So running this charity is great. It's great fun, and I love the challenges.
How do you keep the chocolate from melting?
It's really good. It does not melt unless it's in direct sunlight.
Okay.
It's a pure chocolate. As soon as you got it in your mouth, it'll melt. Chocolate's an amazing product. Oh, I could rave on about chocolate. but it'll melt, but it won't melt while it's just sitting here. I mean, it's average 30 degrees here. This chocolate never melts in 30 degrees, but it's inside. And a lot of our chocolate is used for hot chocolate and like your local our airport here, they're selling hot chocolate for our chocolate. Baking, Chomperado is very famous here. It came from Mexico, the idea, but it's rice with chocolate. And so a lot of our chocolate goes that way. And yeah, if you want to learn about chocolate, go to Craft Chocolate TV. What's his name? I forget his name, but he's from Hawaii, Manoa Chocolate. He's done about 100-odd videos on chocolate, and he's been a huge help to us. I wonder if he ever watches, if he ever does, thank you. Can't remember your name, sorry about that. But thanks for your tips. It's been great what he does. Craft chocolate industry is really exciting. A lot of characters in it, and there's a lot of new flavours, and it's good fun.
That's got to be some great pride for the farmers as well.
Going to go for some international awards, and already some Filipino chocolatiers have won international awards. And we know our chocolate's better than theirs. Sorry. so we're going to get stuck into that next year. So once we do that, we can really ramp up our sales. And they're quite healthy right now. They could be better. And we'll get into some export because we'll have a lot more trees coming on, a lot more chocolate, which means a lot more profit, which means more and more Morava Foundation will become, in 10 or 15 years, self-sustainable. And it will continue to operate as a foundation.
I love it. That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story.
Thanks, Adam.
And if you're listening, go and visit Murava Foundation. That's Muravah. Or go on Amazon and see if you can buy some Mayon Gold, Mayon Gold chocolate.
That's it.
I'll keep those links in the show notes so you can find them easily.
if you don't mind, Adam, that'll be great. Yeah. I'm not sure when it's going to be launched, but surely in the next month or so.
Well, yeah. I'm sure you'll let me know when it's up and keep that posted. But okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much for the opportunity to chat.